Let me just kind of start off by saying how lucky you are. No, that's kind of the wrong way to put it. How lucky I am, to be honest with you. How lucky I am to work for a company that's coming out with something what I consider revolutionary, that I'm really, really excited about. I'm really jazzed as a .NET developer to what we're doing around Windows Phone 7. Also, what I would like to say is that we really, really tried hard, really, really tried hard to get a device here today to show you and to really walk through some of the features around Windows Phone 7. So there's a lot of sort of climbing mountains, trudging through swamps, fighting wild packs of dogs to actually bring, you know, a device to you that we can sit and play with today. Okay? So Windows Phone 7, right here, I will say, hold on to your hats, because I need to. Because what we have is essentially, this is one of three devices that has made its way outside the boundaries of Redmond, Washington. This is probably one of a few dozen of phones that exist. We have it here today that we're going to play with. With that, please accept the caveat that things could go wrong. I would say the hardware itself is very raw, right? The software itself is about 6 weeks old. We have made tremendous advancements in the software itself in the past 6 weeks. However, in prepping for this event today, we had certain demos that didn't work with the new bits. So as opposed to sort of working through those hassles, we have a six-week-old build. But I will say that we do have a device. It's functioning as of 2 hours ago. We'll see where it's at today. That is not to say that it's because of the phone. It's not to say it's because of the OS. It's not to say because of the tools. It's because it's early. We are early. Okay, we are very early in the sense that this device will ship holiday 2010. You as developers, however, can start building apps today. And we're going to talk about that. Shall we? All right. You know what else helps? When you switch laptops, it usually helps when you switch the little devices that you plug in the laptop as well. There we go. So let's talk about Windows Phone 7, shall we? Nothing like saving this to the end, right? So thank you for sticking around. So when we talk about Windows Phone 7, there's this whole new the philosophy around what the device needs to be. You know, it's all about focusing on the end user, and it's the whole idea around this glanceable design paradigm. The idea of having sort of, you know, be able to glance at your device and getting, you know, access the information right there, okay? As opposed to having, I don't know what phone does this, to be honest with you, or phones, but having to launch several applications to get to different types of data, right? It's all about having that information right there at the forefront, right? So it's all about, you know, this idea around standardizing around a design experience, and we'll talk about that, what that means. Sort of standardizing on the format, a baseline configuration that you as a developer can code to, as opposed to jumping around trying to have your application run in multiple form factors, right? And also talking about a strong developer platform so you as developers can take advantage of the tools you know to build great applications for Windows Phone 7. All right? So we're kind of focused on two areas around, you know, Windows Phone 7, right? The idea of smart design. Looking at the sort of the existing landscape of phones and kind of how we can sort of produce an environment that our users want, right? How can they get the work done that they need to get done? This idea of life in motion, this idea of, you know, being able to sort of live their professional lives as well as their personal lives and having it all, you know, based up in this little device that sits in their pocket or sits in their hand. The idea of integrated experiences, right? The integrated experiences means that I don't have to launch multiple applications to do various things, but everything's integrated as kind of one experience, an integrated experience. All right, so when we look at sort of the design philosophy around Windows Phone, kind of where are we going with this, right? To me, you know, when I first saw it, it looked different, right? I was, whoa, okay. Wow, that's interesting, right? And so the idea around this sort of design philosophy, if you get a chance, we actually came out with our developer story at the recent Mix conference in Las Vegas. Every single one of the sessions of the Mix conference, the keynotes, the breakouts, they're available online. So go check those out. You can go to live.visitmix.com. One of the breakout sessions that they had was with the Windows Phone 7 design team. And they talked about sort of this philosophy, or sort of the genesis behind the ideas around, you know, what should this UI look like? How should this phone work? How should it interact? What should it do? Well, first and foremost, I hope it makes phone calls. That'd be, you know, that'd be nice. But you know, but this idea of, like, once again, life in motion. This idea of sort of standing behind sort of this design language, design philosophy, and they came up with this concept called Metro. So when we look at sort of the design of the UI of the phone, the code name is Metro. And the idea was sort of the idea, or sort of this genesis of the what the OS should look like, is around this idea of around Metro signage. The idea that it's simple, it's clean, but also provides compelling information in sort of a very glanceable way, right? Yes, we invented a new word. It's called glanceable. Look it up, right? This idea that I can just glance and I get the information right away. So that's the idea sort of around this notion of creating this design around the phone. So it's all about integrated experiences, okay? It's, you know, viewports into the phone functionality. It's not about single application launching. It's about this concept of something called hubs, okay? So there's 6 hubs inside of Windows Phone 7. The idea that, you know, it's not about sort of finding these different applications and drilling these applications, but, you know, sort of bringing these things together into these hubs. And for Phone 7, we have People Hub, the Office Hub, Pictures, Music and Video, Marketplace, and Games. And you as developers can actually build applications that can integrate into these hubs, okay? So once again, it's about hosting experiences. It's about that integrated experience, as opposed to sort of just having a bunch of applications laid out in your phone. So here's the exciting sort of story for developers. Standardizing the hardware. Creating a baseline configuration that you can code to and take advantage of. And to be honest with you, it's some pretty powerful stuff. So if we look at, you know, every single phone, well, at least for, I'd say for V1 or the initial launch, we're going to come out with 1 screen resolution. Shortly thereafter, there'll be a 2nd screen resolution. Okay, so first and foremost, it's going to be 800 by 480 screen resolution. Every phone will be capacitive touch, right? Every phone will have at least a minimum of a 5 megapixel camera with flash, right? There will be a baseline configuration for processor, for a GPU. Yes, there will be a GPU in the phone. That's to take advantage of sort of this graphical power to create these really compelling emerges of applications with technologies like Silverlight and XNA. And then also, when we look at sort of the standardizing around hardware buttons, yes, these are the decisions that we make. Hardware buttons, there will be 3, not 4, not 10, not 6, but 3 buttons, and 3 buttons alone. Because once again, it's all about sort of that experience for the phone, making sure that there's a standard user experience for the end user. So they know that when they pick up a Windows phone, this is what it does, as opposed to trying to figure out how is it different than this other Windows phone. So the 3 buttons, on the left, we have the back button. In the middle, we have the home button. And on the right, we have the search button. Okay? And for the search, it can be contextual in the sense that if you're in the People Hub, and once again, the People Hub is this idea where I can sort of combine all of my people, if you will, in a sense that I have contacts on my SIM card on my phone. I have contacts in my Exchange server at work. I have contacts from my Yahoo address book, from my Live address book. So if I set up all those accounts on my phone, those all get pulled into the People Hub, and they're all in one list. These are all my contacts, and they're aggregated as such. So when I'm in the People Hub and I click on the search button, now I'm searching people, right? When I'm sort of elsewhere, you know, otherwhere on the phone, maybe the home screen or somewhere else, and I click the search button, it takes me to a Bing search where I can actually be connected and search with Bing. Right, so it's kind of that contextual search. So application platform goals. The idea, once again, it's all about the end users. It's helping them personalize their phone. They like their phone the way it is, right? But it's also being able to customize in a sense that makes sense to them. It's not Microsoft dictating, here's the icons that are on the front screen, and these are the only icons you're going to get. But being able to take your icons and your applications in what we call tiles, and to be able to customize the layout on your phone. Maybe you're more interested in seeing, you know, glancing on your phone and seeing what the weather is, or your stock, or how many text messages you have, or what have you. So it's being able to customize the look and feel of the device. right? Very important for developers. Help developers be profitable. Okay, epic. So once again, creating the facilities that allows you as a developer to essentially expose your application to the masses, right? Providing a facility where you write an application, you want people to find, discover the application, and hopefully purchase the application, right? So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. And also the idea that we have inherent functionality built in the phone to take advantage of existing cloud services. So we have technology built into the phone to do things like make, you know, calls to cloud-based services, right? So we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So elements of the application platform, we kind of break it down into four groups. This idea that, you know, the runtime on the screen or the code that you write, the tools and support, what you'll use to create your applications, cloud services, you know, code you write on the server or servers, services that you take advantage of, as well as the developer portal services, how you as a developer can sort of push your application out there for consumption. So we look at sort of the general entities. We have, you know, the runtime on the screen. So this is the idea of, you know, how do I create the applications? What is the application I'm coding to? So out of the box today, there's two technologies to build applications, Silverlight and XNA. So it's Silverlight on the phone as well as XNA. And we'll dive a little bit deeper in the next slide with this one. But also being able to take advantage of the .NET framework, right? To be able to create applications that span multiple platforms, right? So I target XNA, I can build applications for the phone, for the Xbox, as well as Windows. Targeting Silverlight, I can build applications that target the phone, target the web, target the desktop with out-of-browser support, as well as our recent announcement at Dev Connections, where we announced Silverlight 4, that will soon have support on embedded devices as well, right? Okay. So once again, taking advantage of a singular technology to be able to create multiple types of applications that span devices. And this device we're talking about today is the phone. Now, the tools, this is where it gets really interesting. The tools are, once again, the tools you know. As I said in the last session, that you all are, as .NET developers, are cloud developers. Well, guess what? As a .NET developer, you're also Windows Phone developers. Taking advantage of the technologies that you know and hopefully love today, to be able to build phone-based applications. So when we look at, you know, the tools, we have, of course, Visual Studio as the development tool. We also have Expression Blend, where Expression Blend is an interactive design tool that helps us build XAML-based user interaction. The idea that I'm sort of defining layout through XAML-based technologies, but it's a little bit more than that. It's giving me the tools that I can actually really sort of push XAML technology to take advantage of things like animations and transformations and keyframes and things that designers know how to do to make applications look immersive and amazing. So when we look at the tools, we did try to figure out, you know, what's the right story here? What do we do around the tools? Well, the tools are going to be free. Okay? The tools are free. So when we look at Visual Studio, there's going to be an addition to Visual Studio called Visual Studio Express for Windows Phone. That's free. There's going to be an addition of Microsoft Expression Blend for Windows Phone. That's going to be free. Now, if you already have these products, these tools will just inject themselves into your existing tools and your existing Visual Studio. So if you have Visual Studio 2010 today, it'll just add the phone functionality into Visual Studio. If you don't have Visual Studio, it'll install Visual Studio Express for Windows Phone. Also, XNA Game Studio, once again, is an add-on to Visual Studio, which will be free as well, that allows you to create XNA-based applications. So cloud services, the idea that you could take advantage of cloud services, but we're also going to provide cloud services to make it easier for you to create the kinds of applications you want. Things like location-based services. This idea that I have a phone, wouldn't it be nice to know where I'm at? Well, how do you do that? Right? It's difficult, right? You can do things like, you know, utilizing GPS, but what happens if you don't have a GPS signal? What happens if I'm in this building and I don't have a GPS signal? How do I know where I'm at? You can do things like utilizing cellular antenna triangulation, right? Or you can do things like utilizing Wi-Fi location as well. So basically, there are services out there that drive around looking for hotspots, and they map those hotspots, and they sort of offer that up as a service. We're utilizing those services to sort of combine them all together, and as the phone, what you do is say, essentially say, where am I? And we utilize one of those services to determine here's our best estimate of where we think you are, right? Based upon if it's GPS, right? Whether it's Wi-Fi or whether it's cellular triangulation. So there's kind of like this good, better, best scenario in the sense that, you know, what type of location provider am I using? But we send that information through utilizing the location service. So you don't have to worry about that. Also, the notification service, this idea that being able to communicate with your applications that are running on the phone. So the idea here is like, as an example, let's say, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm building a news application, okay? And as opposed to my news application always going out and sort of polling, looking for information, maybe I want to send breaking news to sort of subscribers of my application. So I'll have like a service running in the cloud that will actually send out a notice to the notification Microsoft notification services. Microsoft notification services knows the phone sort of listening, if you will, and it will push down that message to the phone. And based upon what kind of message it is, it'll either give you like a little toast pop-up on the phone, right? That'll give you a little message, and maybe you can click on that message and it'll launch your application. Or maybe it's just informational. Or you can also do something what's called live tiles. So when you look at the phone, you look at the icons on the phone, those are called tiles. We can modify the data that's on that tile based upon a notification. New message, you know, breaking news, you know, Cubs win the World Series, you know, I don't know, right? I'm going a little crazy, but, you know, bear with me. So, and once again, we're looking at sort of that notification service as kind of a way to do sort of back-end processing for your applications. Also, portal services, this is the idea where we're providing the facility, once again, for you to package and make available your applications to the consumers. So we have the portal where you package up your application, you submit it to the portal, it goes through a verification process, and we have stated that we'll be very transparent on that verification process and where it stands, and we'll have guidelines of what we will accept and what we will reject, right? And so it will go through the verification process. Once it goes through the verification process, it will get signed. Once it's signed, it goes through our deployment service. Then our deployment services essentially pushes it to the marketplace. And that's when you can start earning some money, right? So that's when it makes it easy for people who have Windows phones to discover your application and to also purchase your application. So once again, we said the two flavors of the applications. We talk about Silverlight and XNA. So Silverlight's all about sort of event-based application model, okay? As you push a button, there's an event that gets raised, you handle the button event, right? So it's about the event-driven model. But also, you know, if you look at sort of the XNA technology, this is all about, you know, if you're doing some sort of heavy graphics processing or game development, you're going to be doing XNA. XNA is called loop-based programming. So essentially what happens is you have a game that's running 30 frames per second. There's actually a method called update that gets called 30 times per second. And through that method, you need to handle various inputs. You know, if you have input to the application or whatever, and from there it's going to draw every time it calls that. So that's how it happens, 30 frames per second. So if you have sort of that loop-based, you know, sort of graphics rendering, you can use XNA. But if you're doing sort of event-based, you know, model development, you're going to be utilizing something like Silverlight. Okay? Once again, same tools. It's all built on top of the .NET framework. So with both of these technologies, though, with Silverlight and XNA, there are common capabilities. There's common capabilities for input around touch for the phone, the hardware buttons. There's also common capabilities around media, around accessing, you know, phone sensors, accessing the phone APIs. Also, you know, being able to have hub integration as well as, you know, being able to have access to those cloud-based, you know, inherent, you know, sort of frameworks for the cloud-based services as well. So when we look at sort of the application model for the phone, it's, if you're a web developer, it's a very familiar concept in the sense that when we look at a phone application and compare it to a web application, there's some similarities there in the sense that a phone application provides UI as pages, XAML pages. So you navigate through a page structure, you know, so you navigate to a page. And because we have the, you know, sort of the navigation built in, when you hit the back button, it goes to the previous page, kind of like you're used to on the web. Okay. You also navigate utilizing URIs. So it's an application slash second page dot XAML, right? That's how you navigate to the second page. There's the shell frame. The shell frame is what hosts the pages in your application. And so that can contain sort of a collection of those pages, so we can do that back functionality. So it's very similar to, like, once again, the web browser. And also we have sort of the back stack and the sessions that, you know, represent kind of histories and tabs inside the browser. So once again, as a web developer, very familiar concept to understand, to get how this application works. So once again, the phone developer tools, they're free. They're available today. Part of the developer tools, which I forgot to mention, unfortunately, is that there is an emulator built in. So as much as we would love to give you, Brian, do you have those phones for everybody? Sorry. So as much as we would love to give you a phone and have it in your hands, the developer gets the phone, it's just not physically possible today. However, we have a very rich emulator built inside of the tools that you can do a lot of, you know, great work around to get your applications up and running. So those are available at developer.windowsphone.com. So go there now. Well, not now. Maybe in a few minutes. So we talk about some cloud integration. So once again, we kind of look at these devices as kind of falling into our software plus services sort of story, in the sense that, you know, having sort of this rich, you know, sort of device, right, that can only do so much, but to do so much more, let's pull in some services that are available through cloud-based service calls. So the idea is when we talk about, you know, the phone's going to be, you know, sort of attaching itself or maybe having some sort of processing going on in the cloud, and we use the device to display that information. So we can tie into services, you know, your web service, right? So if you build your own type of services that you can tie into, or whether you take advantage of existing web services. Here's some examples like Facebook and Hulu and Flickr, Netflix, or Microsoft services. The phone already has Xbox Live support built in, so all you gamers out there, right, you can keep that gamer score up and running, right? At all times, standing in line, at work? No? Okay. So once again, having to, you know, taking advantage of, once again, things like location service, notification service, and as I would, you know, suspect as we go down the road, we'll be providing additional services for you to take advantage to make you have amazing applications, to allow you to have amazing applications. So deployment process, once again, we kind of talked about this already. So what's that process? You have the tools on your desktop. You have the emulator. You built it. You test it. Once you're ready to submit it, to actually release it to the world, you go through the verification process. You go, you develop, you debug it. You submit it to the developer portal, they validate it, and then they verify it. And then once it's verified, they will certify and sign it and push it through our deployment services, and then it makes its way to the marketplace. And then from the marketplace, we have a marketplace on the phone. There's also going to be a marketplace, a desktop client through the Zune Marketplace software on your desktop. So once again, taking advantage, giving an ability for you to find and discover your applications. But what's nice, what we kind of, we unfortunately don't talk about here, is part of the framework that we provide in building these applications is the Try APIs. The Try APIs allows you as a developer to build Try functionality into your application. So kind of a try before you buy scenario. So as opposed to, you know, an application being out there, you know, 99 cents, $1.99 or $39.99, but you don't know what the application does unless you go to some other website to find out what it does. A developer can decide that I want to, you know, put some try functionality in my application. So on the marketplace, there will be a try button or a buy button. You click try, it downloads the application to your phone, and then you're kind of in a trial period. And it's up to the developer or the application developer to determine what that exactly means, if it's limited functionality or if it's time-based. But the framework will work with the device as well as the application to notify it when the trial period is over, and you can sort of switch from there or maybe present them with an opportunity to buy the app right then and there or what have you. So that's some great functionality that's available too. So let's build some apps, shall we? Let's go to it. Okay. So what I have here is I have the Visual Studio 2010 Express for Windows Phone. And you guys really can't see me, can you? That's probably better that way. So what we do is we'll go ahead and launch the Visual Studio 2010 Express for Windows Phone. And once again, it's just the normal Visual Studio environment that you'll come to know and love. All right, let's load that again. So once again, this is Visual Studio 2010. It is the IDE that you know. So in this case, when I click New Project, right, you'll see that it's kind of a slimmed down option of what I have available to build. Now, if I had Visual Studio 2010 already installed, like, you know, Professional or Ultimate What would happen is the tools themselves would be available in that version, and I would have access to my ASP.NET web application development, cloud development, WPF development, Silverlight, what have you. Here it's kind of the slimmed down, where I can build phone applications, whether I'm targeting Silverlight or whether I'm targeting XNA. So we go ahead and select Silverlight, and we select the Windows Phone application. We go ahead and click OK. So here's the app, here's the design surface, okay? So we have kind of, you know, we have the design surface, you know, the emulator, what the emulator represents. So I can do drag and drop based, you know, control placement and various other things. Over on the right-hand side is the XAML editor. So if you're doing Silverlight development or WPF development today, this should look very familiar to you, other than just the Chrome for the phone. Out of the box, we have a default style, if you will, of the application. So you can kind of see over the left-hand side here, we have, you know, a small font for a title for my application, a larger font called page title. It's set up in the structure of multiple grids to sort of support layout. So we see all that in the XAML-based structure. And then we have the code behind page that's associated with that XAML file that has all of our code behind. So this is where all our backend code goes. So I can specify the phone can support either portrait or landscape, which means that the application itself, as I take the phone from portrait mode and turn it, it will automatically redraw the page to represent it in landscape format. So I will specify, does my application only support portrait, does it only support landscape, or does it support both? Okay, so you'd specify that. Now in the app.xaml file, this is where I'm defining all sort of, you know, application level resources. This is where I'm defining sort of all my styles, if you will. So you can see I have a number of different style setters for my different style definitions. So these are kind of all the defaults to kind of support that kind of that Metro UI design principle that we talked about. But once again, if you have a completely different sort of look and feel to your app, this is just a starting point. You can completely remove this and customize it to your heart's content. So now if we go ahead and just hit F5 and run the application, what this will do, this actually launches the emulator. Now, it's not really an emulator. It's actually a virtual instance. So it's a virtual machine that's actually running the phone OS. So what it's doing, it's turning on my phone. Once it turns on my phone, Visual Studio will connect to the phone and deploy my application, so it takes a little bit of time. So I'm sort of down the bottom right-hand side, you may be able to see, you know, connecting to Windows Phone emulator. So there's a little bit of a startup cost the first time you run the phone. Once it gets, you know, the phone boots up, the emulator that we have, the version that we have today, doesn't have the full phone functionality. It just has the browser, the web browser, and the browser works, right? So I can launch Internet Explorer. It'll take advantage of my local internet connection and use that for the phone so I can actually get access to data. So if you're building your application and you utilize cloud-based services, you have the ability to do that. So now we're loading up my application into the phone. It's loading some of the symbols. And it's got this nice little resize button here that if, you know, it doesn't really fit on your page, you can hit a little resize button and kind of redraw that. Okay? So now, as the application loads, really wanted to show you what that load process is like. But sort of the tip that I want to point out here is that when you're done testing your application, don't turn off the emulator. It's okay to leave it running, okay? That way, the next time you build and deploy, it's that much faster. So you can see here's my application. Remember, it supports portrait and landscape, so if I flip it, right, it automatically adjusts the screen as well. I didn't have to build that in my application. That's built into it itself. So real simple application. Now, let's go with a little bit more. I'd say richer application, if you will. So we'll do file. New project, and let's pick the phone list application. The phone list application sort of takes it a step further in the sense that it kind of, you know, creates this paradigm around a list-based application, maybe like an RSS reader or like a news browser or something, where you essentially have a list of information, you select an item, and it goes to some sort of details behind that item. So it automatically has that project structure set up for you. It's also implementing a pattern called model view view model. So if you're doing Silverlight development today or WPF development, you may have heard of model view, view model. That's a pattern that it's implementing that works really well in XAML-based technologies. So in this case, you can see in my emulator, or I'm sorry, in my designer, you can see that it's already painted some sort of data, right? That's because I'm able to take advantage because of the XAML-based technologies and the model view, view model. I'm actually able to set up design time sample data. So I have design time sample data that actually gets loaded into the design surface. So as I'm in the tool and designing my application, I can have some sort of real-world data, if you will, to work with. Now, behind the model view view model, we implement the pattern to support that. So in this case, we have a couple models here to support our model view view model pattern. And those essentially contain what's called an observable collection, typically with the property name of items. We have, in this case, we have a custom constructor, and we also support the property changed event handler. And more importantly, it needs to implement the iNotify property change interface. That's it. That's all you need to do to support the model view view model pattern. So this time, if we go ahead and hit F5, go ahead and loads up the application, come back to my emulator, and it's not flipping. There it goes. So this time it should be, you know, much faster than having to reboot my phone and deploy the symbols and deploy the application to the phone. So in this case, what we'll get is we'll get that list of information. And it's pulling in, once again, pulling in separate sample data and building out that list for us. So once again, it's kind of giving you a jump start under this type of application. Okay? So in this case, you know, if my laptop was touch-enabled, it would take my touch-enabled laptop, and I can use my finger to actually navigate through the phone as well. So touch will translate through. But in this case, I don't have touch, so I can just take my mouse and kind of just, you know, kind of flick it up there and kind of get that little semblance of you know, sort of paging through my application. Now, if I click on one of these items, there's some animations built into here of kind of like this flipping open page, right? So once again, these are all kind of default instances of this application type, okay? So let's actually take that idea of that list application, let's expand upon it. So we have a separate application here. We have this Netflix mobile application. Now, earlier we talked about OData. OData is this new data format protocol that we're behind around being able to expose data in a standard-based way through the Atom publishing protocol. So the idea is that we have an exposed endpoint in the cloud or in your data center, or exposed endpoint through the web-based services that you talk to. You essentially submit a request, and it returns a result set back in a sort of a structured formatted way. So Netflix is one of our first data providers that's supporting the OData protocol. So if we go ahead and actually bring up a web browser, you can do this yourself. We go to odata.netflix.com/catalog. And this is an exposed endpoint that Netflix is providing that I can get access to all their data around movies, right? Now we can use a structure on the URL to actually filter that query. Okay, so let's go ahead and actually filter it out. So they have something called titles. You can see there's a collection of titles down here. So I want to filter titles, and I want to filter it based upon where the release year is greater than 2009. Okay, so we give it a specified URL. We pass a specific URL that translates into a query on their end. Now it doesn't matter. I don't know what kind of database they have. I hope it's SQL Server, right? But it doesn't. In this case, it really doesn't matter to me. I don't need to know that it's a SQL Server database. I just need to know that it's an OData endpoint, and I know how to work with OData. So I submit a GET request, giving it a structured URL, and that translates into a query that whatever data service that they're providing in the back end will translate it into that type of query language to return a result set back in this Atom Pub format. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to write an application that consumes this data, right? So in this case, once again, we started off, kind of went a little ahead here, but we started off with that list type application, right? And we're going to expand upon it. We've added some functionality to it already, but we're going to expand upon it. So in this case, we have a main page. So first thing that I want to do is actually essentially go get my data, so load the data context. So for this particular main page that has my list, I'm going to go in and get the data for that. So in this case, let's use some snippets that I have. So what we have here is we have something, a class called Netflix Catalog. Netflix Catalog is actually a proxy class. If you look over here, Netflix.cs, this is a proxy class that was generated by a tool, the Data Service Util tool, that actually would connect out to that endpoint and then generate a proxy class based upon the information that it received. So now we have a structured, an object structure here that defines a sort of the class levels that we need to know how to query or work with these entity types that the OData protocol from Netflix is providing. So in this case, you can see here in the Netflix catalog, we have something called titles. And if we look at titles, title over here. If we look at titles, you can see the different properties that are behind a title. So titles, you know, have languages, names. If you scroll on down here, they have various, you know, events to support, you know, data modification. You know, but here's release year. That's the one we're working with. Okay? So we go back and we use that, we load that data context, we instantiate that catalog, we specify the URL endpoints to where that catalog exists so we know how to connect to it. We write what's called a data service query. So this is part of WCF data services. So this query is actually going on saying, give me all your titles. Now, in this case, it's not returning all titles because Netflix is providing sort of a way that we're not you know, taking too much data. So they have some constraints on their side that, you know what, if when you request titles, well, we're only going to return the top 20, 25. So that's defined on their side, okay? So that's okay. But what we want to do is let's modify this query a bit. We'll say add query operation. Now remember, I provided a sort of that structure of that GET request on the URL to filter. So in this case, we use add query option to specify what that filter is. So in this case, we want to specify filter. And using sort of the syntax of OData query that will get translated. No, there's no such thing as release a year. I think that would fail. So we'll do where it's greater than GT 2009, right? So we're specifying a filter on titles because we're going through the proxy class, titles, filtering based upon where release year is greater than 2009. And then what happens is we're actually need to send out a dispatcher to kind of send a go off the UI thread to submit that request going through the data service query, which will go through that URL that we submitted, go out to through the internet, through the cloud, talk to odata.netflix.com, pass it that query, and hopefully get some result sets back, you know, in that OData format. And then just inherently we know how to handle that by just setting the data context to the result. Okay? So now if we go into the constructor of the page, let's go ahead and wipe out that data context because that was pulling in some sample data. And we'll specify that we need to call the load data context. All right. So now if I go ahead and hit Control F5 and run this, what should happen is when the main page loads, the constructor fires, it calls load data context, which actually sends a request out to the OData service, returns the result set, and then binds that data context to this list box that we have on our form. Okay. Did I say that this is reliant upon the internet connection that we have in the room? Okay, maybe I missed a step. Okay, everything looks okay? I know what I missed. It might help if we actually have something to bind to. My apologies. So we go back to the main page. And on the main page, there's a list box. And in the list box, there's something called the data template. The data template, we need to define the elements that we need to bind to. So I'll go and drag and drop the snippet in there. So through this snippet, apologize for the real estate here. Try to clean this up as much as I can. Through the snippet, we have a data template that's tied to a list box item. We bind it to the results that's coming back. And through there, we have, you know, properties from the title entity that we can bind to. So in this case, we're binding to the boxart.smallURL. We're binding to name. We're binding to the synopsis and so forth. So now let's go ahead and run that when I actually have something to bind to. So it goes off, makes the request, grabs the data, and now it's able to bind to that list item data template. So now we get a result set back. And we can just kind of, you know, this is what tends to happen sometimes. You know, it turns as a mouse click versus a pan. So we get able to pan the list with our mouse. be able to select an item and go to a details page. Okay? So let's go ahead and implement that details page. So once again, don't close the emulator. I'll just click the home button. So go back to our application. Let's open up our details page. So detailspage.xaml. Okay? So detailspage.xaml, once again, interest of time, let's go ahead and drag and drop a little snippet of code in here while they'll walk through what that code's doing. Okay? So in this case, what we have is we essentially defined a form. It's a result set form. So we just have, you know, on the left-hand side, we have a text block. And on the right, with some sort of, you know, label information, on the right-hand side, we have text blocks that we're binding to. And then down below here, we actually have an image that we're binding to. So we're pulling in a URL from our result set that when it binds to an image, we actually go back and make another request out to pull that image in and bind it to our image control, right? So it shows a little graphic. So if we look at mainpage.cs and we scroll down to here to when you actually make a selection on the list box, you'll see here's some of the navigation that's taking place. Remember, you know, it's very web-like in the way you navigate. So in this case, you can see here that I'm actually, when, you know, this is actually, when I select an item, what happens is a page transition storyboard from XAML gets played, so it does a little animation. When that animation completes, that's when the navigation actually takes place. So we navigate to the details page utilizing a URI, so it's /detailspage.xaml, and then what we do is we actually take the selected item's data context, and we set that to the actual page's data context, which makes it very easy for us to data bind. Okay? So behind selected item is the details information for that title. We pass that entity, if you will, that data context to the details page, and then we just strip, you know, then we just bind on a control by control basis. We're not re-requesting the data, we're just passing the data that we already have. Make sense? So now, once we get over here, the entire page is that data context, and then we just submit our binding definitions of what we need to bind to for the controls. Okay, so assuming I didn't miss anything, let's go ahead and run that. Goes and gets our list. Let's see, I just saw How to Train Your Dragon the other day, great movie. So we click that, it takes the existing data context, passes it off to the details page, navigates the details page, and we just bind with that result set. Okay, so we bind, you know, we have the average rating, the release year, the URL. Now what I want to do is I want to take that URL and I actually want to be able to click on that URL. So now inside of Silverlight, we have the support for a web browser control. So what I want to do is let's go ahead and hook that up and have a third page, essentially the web browser page, and we'll drop a web browser control on there that we can then send that link over to the web browser control and have the web browser control render that up. So we'll go into my toolbox. Now, if you look at the toolbox for a Windows Phone application, essentially these are the controls that are available for your Windows Phone app. Okay? So, you know, your typical Silverlight type of controls. And once again, one thing to note, when I talk about Silverlight for Windows Phone, it's all based upon Silverlight 3 and then some. Okay? So if you're building Silverlight 3 applications today, take those Silverlight 3 applications, port them to the phone. All you got to do is basically just change the Chrome, if you will, the UI, to support sort of that layout. Everything else just works because it is Silverlight 3. But it's Silverlight 3 then some. Then some is basically adding the additional functionality for phone support, right? We did just ship Silverlight 4. We haven't made any announcements around sort of what that roadmap looks like, but today it's Silverlight 3. So just keep that in mind. So we have the web browser control. We'll go ahead and drag and drop that into our design surface. And it's really, really small. So let's make it really, really big. So we'll right-click on that, reset the layout to all. That fills in that space. Okay? So now, if I go to the code behind page for this web browser, I basically need to load that web browser control with something. So let's go ahead and add that snippet in here. Okay. So what happens is I'm getting information sent to me, and I need to pull that information and then essentially set that to my web browser control. But look at what I'm getting that information from. I'm getting it from a URL. Okay. So when I pass information from page to page, I can pass it just like I can in the web browser world as a GET request with a query string. Okay, that is a way to pass data. So if we go back to our details page, now the details page, the way the navigation works from an application standpoint in the phone, it's all relative URLs. So I can't just say, click on that link and just pass http://, whatever the URL is, right? Because that's an absolute URL. So what I need to do is I need to use what's called a converter, our data binding converter, to when I data bind that value, I need to convert it to something else. So that's what we're going to do. So first and foremost, let's go to our URL. So when I click on the URL, it highlights this text block over here. What I want to do is I need to change this to a hyperlink button, okay, to make it actually clickable. So then when I do that, let's go ahead and strip out some of this text. Once again, the fun with 1024x768, but it's okay. So what I need to specify a couple properties. First property is called the navigate URI, and we need to set up the binding. The path equals the tiny URL property. And then we have a converter that we're utilizing. And the converter is actually a static resource. It's actually a class inside of our project. And the converter is actually called URL converter. Okay, and we'll look at that here in a second. Now, what I need to do is actually pull in the content. Pull in the content. We'll data bind to the content. For your musical enjoyment, somebody's phone is going off. So, here what we're doing is we have the hyperlink button. We're binding elements to the navigate URI, so path of tiny URL, but we're converting it during data binding to something called the URL converter. And then just the content, what's displaying inside of that button, is also binding to tiny URL. If we look at URL converter, what it does is it you can convert in and you can convert out. So in data binding, it's two-way data binding, in and out. In this case, we're only going in, we're not going out. So in this case, we're doing a convert. So when we receive a value, we're actually converting that into actually a relative URL for our application, passing the navigation to the web browser page, but then also creating a query string passing what the URL is. And then on the web browser page, we're reading that URL, right? We're reading in that URL and setting the web browser's navigate property equal to whatever that URL is, which should, if everything works, just load the Netflix page of that particular movie title. So let's go ahead and hit save, hit F5. Get our list of movies. Get our list of movies. Did I say get our list of movies? There we go. Who's on the network? Could you please get off? So we go ahead and select, okay, Iron Man 2. Who's excited about Iron Man 2? Thank you to the geeks up front. Okay, so I'm one of you. I'm with you, man. Okay. So we click on the link, right? Now it's a hyperlink button. And we click on the link. It goes to our web browser page, has the web browser control, sends the URL to the web browser control. Now the web browser control is making that request and should load up the web page for the Netflix movie title. Okay? Cool. But it kind of shows you the difference between the relative navigation within my application structure versus actually utilizing sort of that absolute URL for the web browser. So just be aware, that's how you navigate. That's a way to navigate through the pages in your application. Now, let's go ahead and add some additional functionality to this application. So we'll go to the main page, and let's add some actual buttons, an application bar down below. So the idea of like this design philosophy around, you know, what the applications on Windows Phone look like, you know, where's the menu at, right? What does that look like? You know, what are the different buttons? Well, it's called application bar, okay? So what we need to do is there's actually two ways of defining an application bar. We can define an application bar in code or declaratively. So in this case, we're going to define it in code. So we'll draw some snippets in here. And what we're doing is we're defining an application bar. We're instantiating the application bar. We're defining application bar icons to actually pull in images defined inside of our project structure, right? Notice the relative URLs. So these are specified as content files inside of our project. So when it gets packaged up, the content files get brought along with the package of the zap file. We set up the various events behind the buttons. What happens when I click this button? What happens? So we're defining some event handlers, and then we're adding those to the application bar. Those are the application bar icon buttons. Now we also have menu items. Menu items are something that's, you know, you click like this little ellipsis icon view, and it brings up a menu list. So there's application bar icon buttons, as well as menu items. We'll take a look and see what those look like. Once again, you can define this through code like we did, or declaratively within your XAML itself. And the application bar does have some specific, I guess, design considerations around it. For instance, oops, I forgot one step. My apologies. So I defined the application bar class, but I need to actually call it within my my page constructor so that it can actually get built. So we'll build the application bar. Go ahead and hit Control F5. So now, once the application loads up, now we have our application part on there. Okay. Now you see the application buttons, the icon buttons. The sort of the design specifications around the application bar is you can't have more than 5 buttons. You need to be aware of how to design those buttons. In this case, we're utilizing transparent images. And the reason being is that, so I have like this button that actually turns my application bar transparent. You know, we kind of want our button to be transparent as well along with that. Now, we also have the menu. We can, you know, when it's defined as a menu, it's kind of like this little slide up process. Then we have those menu items underneath it. And then what we can do is we can get really funky and, you know, kind of change the background color. So those, there's events behind those menu clicks that are changing. That's a pretty color. Not. Okay. So there's an event handler behind those, the menu item selection that gets called, right? So maybe this is where you'd have your settings or your options for your applications. Or maybe there's various elements in your app. In this case, you know, we don't have the best representation icons. It's a demo. But you click this button and it just reloads the list, okay? Gives you an idea. So now, let's get dangerous, shall we? So I have this nice little phone up here. It's still on. Thank God. We have the phone. So with the tools inside of Visual Studio, I can deploy to the emulator or I can deploy to the phone. So let's go and actually deploy to the phone, see what we get. The question is can you deploy to the phone wirelessly like you can with the Xbox? Not today. I'm not sure if that's going to be a feature or not, but I'm actually plugged in with a USB cable, and that's how I'm connected to the phone. Okay. So in this case, right up here inside of Visual Studio, we have the option to deploy to the emulator or the device. So we're going to select device. Let's go and just build it to be, you know, make sure we're all compiled and everything's good. We right-click the project and we can select deploy. I can also hit F5, right, and it will put me into debug mode where I can actually have the application running on the phone but debugging in my development environment. Okay, so that's cool. So we'll go ahead and click deploy. We'll give a little nod to the demo gods. Please work. And make all kinds of sacrifices. So what we're doing is we're deploying, it's connecting. I don't know if you can see this down below, but I'm a happy man because it said deploy succeeded. And can we switch over to the Wolf? We'll bring up the phone. The phone doesn't look stubby, trust me. It's the skewing of the resolution. So we'll go to a little start menu here. And right there's my Netflix mobile app. Bring it up. Using the data connection, if I have one, I had a wireless connection before, to go and request the data from the OData service. And feet don't fail me now. Okay. I may not have a data. I've been losing wireless connections with this the whole time. But you get the idea. No, I don't really pay attention to that. That was a feature on my part, not the phone. So you get, we deploy the app. I don't have network connectivity for some reason. I'll try to work with it here. Don't want to waste too much time. But we deploy the app to the phone. It takes advantage of the Wi-Fi of the phone to make that network request. Apparently, I'm not logged into the service. Let's go ahead and actually see if we can do that real quick. We go over to settings, to the application list. There's Wi-Fi. Okay, it says I'm connected. So everybody, get off the network, please. So it should work. Okay. Now, can we switch back, please? It deployed. It didn't get data, but it deployed. Trust me, the deployment part was the hardest. The other is a Wi-Fi issue. I blame somebody sucking up all the bandwidth. Okay, so now let's actually do something else with the phone. Now, we have the sensor support in the phone, things like location services, right? Where am I? We have sensor information around sensors for accelerometers. So, moving the phone to, translate that sensor information to do various things, play games, or, shaking the phone, it does something, what have you. So let's actually go ahead and add support for an accelerometer, okay? So what we're going to do is we're actually going to go back to the main page. We're going to go to the code behind, and we're going to add another button to our menu. And this button, what it's going to do is actually going to take us to the accelerometer page. Okay, so we'll add the accelerometer button. What this does is it actually navigates us to a page called accelerometer.xaml. So if we look at accelerometer.xaml, easy for me to say, essentially what it is if you use the location and sensor API support in Windows 7, the code is essentially the same, right? What we do is we instantiate an accelerometer. We set up an event handler called reading changed, and essentially every time a reading comes back from the accelerometer, an event gets fired, and we take the results from that from the event getting fired, and we translate that to some sort of action. So if you're playing a game, right? It's moving the marble on top of the top or the tabletop, or moving your guys, running your guys, whatever the accelerometer translates, right? So if I hold the accelerometer, if I take the phone and tilt it like this or hold it up at a Z plane versus X and Y planes, those are all the inputs that we get. So we do not have sensor support in the emulator today. There have been various ways that I've seen people hack up where they've actually simulated accelerometer support. I've seen people where they've taken Xbox controllers, they plugged them into the laptop, and they've translated Xbox controlled movements into accelerometer input for the phone. Okay. I've also seen people where they've taken Wiimotes, and taken, there's actually a .NET SDK for Wiimotes. So they've taken that .NET SDK and they've simulated, kind of taken the accelerometer input from the Wiimote. I'm going to expense one, by the way. Thank you very much. And so, for demos. So taking the Wiimote and sort of translating the accelerometer as well. So if you don't have a device today, which I'm sure you don't, if you do, please see me after school. But if you don't, you can actually still build applications to support the sensor input by sort of mocking up various other inputs. So now let's go ahead. We have the accelerometer built in there, the support. So we're going to go ahead and deploy this to our phone again. So we go ahead and build this. Okay, everything compiles. We'll right-click and we'll click deploy. Once again, we'll nod to the demo gods. Looks like deploy succeeded already. Bring up our phone. Can we switch to the WIF, please? Sorry. So that we added that little checkbox for our accelerometer page. So we click the checkbox. There's our accelerometer page. I need to turn on. I have a little button on the application bar to turn on the accelerometer. Turn it on. So you can kind of see I'm getting some readings. Now let's see if I can do this so you can actually see it. So you can see as I'm turning it. There's a little feature. Don't worry. So we get, based on various, positions that I change, I'm getting readings from the accelerometer. And then I would be able to translate those in my applications. Okay? So since we're here, thank you. So since we're here on the phone, let's actually walk through some various other sample applications that we announced at MIX. So here's the phone itself. I don't have a lot on this phone. I just rebuilt it this morning, so there's not too much content on here. I don't have it hooked up to my live account, but if I did, I'd go behind the People tab, click on People, you kind of see some nice animations, and I'd be able to see a contact list, so I apologize. Maybe I'll try to get this hooked up afterwards if you guys want to look at it. We could try to get my account hooked up. Actually, getting connected to the network would help. And so we hit the back button, takes me back to that application. Take the back button, so you can kind of see that navigation effect happening. Go back to the main page, we have the calendar. Here's what the most important thing is, Xbox Live support, so we can get that gamer score jacked up while we're waiting in line. Thank you very much. Okay. So it's going to connect to the Xbox Live service. There's been discussions about how you can create Xbox applications to take advantage of things like the notification services to actually do turn-by-turn games with your friends over the Windows Phone device, too. So you have an application up and running on your phone. Your friend has an application up and running on your phone. You start the game, and it uses notification services to send messages back and forth about different turns you make, and you actually play against each other over the air. Okay? So browser works. Trust me. Okay, so we talked about the Zune. Every single Windows phone is a Zune phone. It has the Zune integration services built right in. So if you have a Zune pass, that means that with my phone, I can actually stream all the music that Zune has available for me at a very short, fee per month. It also has a built-in podcast support, video support, the Zune store built right in. Once again, unfortunately, it doesn't look like I have network access, so I can't pull that up. But I'd be able to see, different artists and various other things I can get access to. Let's see, actually, if I go to Marketplace. Maybe that's not a good idea. We'll try this after the fact. So once again, we have some applications. These applications, I actually move their icons onto the start page. So this little arrow here, this is my application list. Sorry for the glare, and my actually more so than my fingerprints. Okay, so this is the application list. So putting up something like AP Mobile. So this is like a news browsing application around the AP. Kind of nice, once again, because of Silverlight, we get those nice transitions, nice animation effects, and we can do things where we can, utilize like the panorama control concept and kind of page through, and once again, it's kind of giving the ability to present news in a different way, right? A very immersive experience, right? But at Silverlight, that's the technology allows us to do that very easily, very simple. So once again, kind of like using just finger swipes, and I can kind of bring it over here, give my like a list of the type of news I want to browse. Let's see, what else do we have? Foursquare is not going to work. Seasmus is not going to work because I don't have network connection. What else did I put on here? Anyways, we have some samples if you guys want to come up afterwards. Here's kind of a neat little application called Hush Hush. This is like a visual diary, if you will, on the phone. So the idea is, as I turn it off, my apologies. So let's break into the diary. Right? So we broke into the diary. So the idea is that I can actually use the phone. I can use the phone's, camera functionality, take pictures, post it in my diary. So if we look at kind of, once again, taking advantage of the Silverlight technology, this control, this is a list box. But because it's Silverlight, I can put a different skin on top of it. It doesn't look like a list box. But underneath the covers, it is a list box with items and elements. So I can go back to previous dates of my diary, bring up the diary, right? Essentially, it has kind of like that page-turning functionality. So like, taking pictures, writing text, kind of keeping, just keeping notes of sort of my various, real-life experiences on this virtual device. All right, can we switch back? So that gives you kind of some examples, some applications that we have. And so we're going to be sitting around. I'll be happy to answer questions. And we'll try to get it connected up to the internet and have actually a more immersive experience for you. All right. Cool stuff. What do you think? So I am really, really, really excited as a .NET developer for this. I have a lot of great ideas of applications I want to write. The problem is I don't have the design skills. So I think what we need to do is we need to, as a community as a whole, for Chicago or larger, is actually bring developers and designers together and really bring the elements of Silverlight the elements of Blend and Visual Studio to allow us to create some amazing applications and push those out there on top of Windows Phone. So as I said, Chicago Code Camp this weekend, we're going to be going deeper into some of the phone discussion, so if you guys can make it out, we'll talk more about some of the elements of building around, you know, the platform for Windows Phone. So they're going around, they're collecting evaluations. We're going to do a quick raffle right afterwards, and we'll just kind of finish up here. So Windows Phone 7, different kind of phone. It's designed for life in motion, right? So it's all about you as developers building great applications targeting the Windows Phone. Mark. Is the source code going to be available? That's a fantastic question. We will make it available. Keep an eye on my blog, daveboss.com, and I will post links up to there, or I will post it directly up there. Yes, so we're also going to provide the content for all of our discussions today. We will also post the sample code up there, too. We'll try to get up there. But what a great transition. If you go to msdnevents.com/resources, we're going to post all the content from today, as well as having links to various resources online for you to get access to training content, hands-on labs, and various other things. But also, don't forget, download the development tools for Windows Phone. developer.windowsphone.com. The tools are available freely today. Start building some cool apps and make sure you share those with us.